think it's important to sort of see the contemporary, but also understand the historical aspects and how valuable they are.
I'm William O'Flaherty from EssentialCSLewis.com. Thanks for joining me for another All About Jack, a C.S. Lewis podcast. Today is the second of a two-part program reflecting and somewhat analyzing the three biographies on C.S. Lewis that came out in 2013. It's a roundtable discussion with the same three guests from the first part. In fact, when I recorded with them, we did it in one evening and hope I'd be able to find a good midpoint to divide it. And I hope as a listener, you found how I presented it enjoyable. If you missed the first part, you can check the show notes for a direct link. In case you forgot, those guests are Dr. Bruce Edwards, Dr. Charlie Starr, and Dr. Crystal Hurd. Those same show notes provide a link to each of their websites for you to learn more about them if you aren't familiar with them, and their sites are also a great place to keep up with what they do. As you might remember, the biographies from 2013 are from Alistair McGrath, Colin Duryea, and Devin Brown. There will also be links in the show notes to where to buy these books and also to the interviews I did with each of those authors about 2 years ago when the books were released. This second part begins with Dr. Bruce Edwards summarizing a few of his thoughts about each book, then Dr. Charlie Starr comments next. After that, Crystal wraps up her comments before, around midway of this podcast, I have them then reflect on books about C.S. Lewis in general that doesn't just focus on biographies, but his writings.
Let me summarize my comments about all three of them and say a few things about Duryea and Brown. Colin Duryea, I think, writes as a sympathetic journalist, writing about friendship and relationships, and I think he does a good job of illuminating the broad points about that. And I think it's satisfactory and it's wholesome. And Devin Brown, I think he writes, I would put it as an aspiring mythmaker, in that he's interested in keeping our attention to Lewis on a high plane. His role is of continuing a tradition of championing the relevance and continuing efficacy of Lewis for 21st century readers. Just to summarize what I think about McGrath is he's almost like an anthropologist to the world of Lewis, as if he kind of doesn't know that world, and he's discovering it as he goes along. And I think that puts a reader who doesn't know more about Lewis at a disadvantage, because in some ways it's an agnosticism about Lewis that I think is not warranted of a biographer. But I think all in all, I agree certainly with Crystal that these can be seen as complementary works. And I have often said to people over the last couple of years, Colin's book is one that you can go to for reference. Brown's is a work that can go to the heart of who Lewis is. You know, a life observed. I think that's an apt subdescription. And I think McGrath can be the broad strokes about, as has already been said by Charlie, growing up in Northern Ireland, the politics of Oxford, and for the more tender and more intimate look at Lewis, I think you have to go to other works.
My personal favorite of the three biographies is Devin Brown's. I like his writing style. I like his approach to a popular audience. If Devin Brown has given us a biography of Lewis that in many ways echoes what Lewis wrote in Surprised by Joy, he does it in a way that a modern audience can access this spiritual approach to Lewis. There are places in Surprised by Joy where audiences can get bogged down into Lewis's references to the philosophers he's reading, for example, and that sort of thing. Parts I like the most in Devin's biography, the three problems with naturalism summed up on pages 122 and following, and there he's following the philosophical tradition of the true, the beautiful, and the good. So how does Lewis see difficulties with naturalism, these three traditional avenues of philosophy. Brown points out an argument which Lewis offers in each of those categories, and he sort of made that whole point gel for me in a way that I'd really never noticed before, and I certainly should have. Hippolytus and the Leap from the Edge on page 128 and 9, a significant motif in Lewis is this idea of the leap from the edge. The light story is very much a part of that idea, and some of Lewis's poems resonate with the idea of the leap from the edge. And Brown is the first that I've come across, or at least the first I remember, who gives us a potential source for that concept, and then also connects it nicely to The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, if I remember correctly. He gives us some great one-liners, some great little moments. And so, for example, his awesome insight into A Grief Observed, where he says the book begins with joy and ends with God. And what a beautiful way to summarize Lewis's entire process in working through his grief in that book. I like his overall goal, pursuing Lewis's spiritual journey. Brown writes a biography of Lewis, emphasizing what Lewis wrote an autobiography about, but doing so with a clarity and a readability that's perfect for our time. And I really do feel like that when I read Devin Brown's biography of Lewis, I am meeting Lewis the man. I also like his very good, clear description of joy, of the concept of joy, early on in the biography. The Duryea biography I also liked very much, and I really felt like it kept getting better, as if Colin was beginning, well enough, but really sort of hit a stride at about chapter 11. Not only just does the information become wonderful to me, but his style becomes excellent to me in the later chapters of the book. One of the things I liked in the Duryea biography is it's just filled with all kinds of wonderful little fun facts, things that I may have heard about Lewis but I had forgotten, or things that I had never heard about Lewis, talking about his height and weight when he was a young man, the capturing of 60 Germans in World War I single-handedly, his three Oxford degrees, his loud booming voice, and not just his voice but his own brother's voice, Warney's voice that was loud as well. Owen Barfield, the dancer. Flora, who died on Albert's 45th birthday. Lewis's mother died on his father's birthday. And the fact that his mother had given the boys Bibles before she died. Duryea's description of Joy Lewis's involvement in the writing of Till We Have Faces, I thought that was particularly excellent. Coghill's minutes during an English reading meeting when Lewis read a paper on Spenser, and Neville Coghill wrote the minutes for that meeting in Spenserian poetic form. Now, that just plain made me laugh. Lots that I liked about the Duryea biography. Negatives, a very minor one, is he says he wants to focus on Lewis's relationships with others. And it seems like there may be times when he drifts away from doing that and maybe doesn't manage that focus throughout the entire book, but he always returns to it at least. So that's a very minor point. His arguments against a sexual relationship between Lewis and Mrs. Moore are to me a bit unconvincing, and his explanation of the enjoyment and contemplation dichotomy in Lewis's thinking, I'm not convinced is quite right, but honestly, it shows what I think continues to be a major problem in thinking about Lewis on this concept. I'm not convinced that any of us yet quite have that concept down yet, and I myself even wrote heavily about it in a couple of different places before. And so it's a problem that still needs to be resolved. So that, two of the three things I named as dislikes, I would hesitate to name. I think in Duryea you get a really good biography of C.S. Lewis, and I certainly recommend it.
I think we've gotten a really great, set of criticisms here. I agree. Devin paints a Lewis that as a warm body, as a sort of a well-rounded person with this engaging personality. Every time I read Devin Brown and anything he writes, I feel like he gets it. Like Bruce was mentioning the empathy earlier. I think Devin achieves that because you feel sort of the warmth, you know, of Lewis. Not that you would, you know, smell the cigarette smoke or you know, taste the pint, but there is a sense of I guess almost like an intimacy of sort of knowing Lewis very well, and all the stuff, Charlie, that you mentioned. Yeah, I completely agree. Excellent point. Devin really does great textual analysis, and he makes really wonderful connections to the biography, the life, and the chronology of Lewis through the literature. I've mentioned before that I really like Duryea. I do. I like him, and I think he really strives to do something different, to bring in new information, as Charlie mentioned, the height, the weight, and the Bibles. That was actually something that I came across last year when I was at the Wade doing research on Flora and Albert for my own project, and I thought that was such an incredible insight. You know, that was the last thing that she gifted her sons with. But even in different places, you'll notice he cites the Lewis papers, not other scholars. And so he's trying to do some original work, even in the very familiar form of biography. And again, we've mentioned there's a lot of those out there, but I believe that he really strives to do something sort of unique and different with his. So again, I love both of them. I love Brown and I love Duryea. And I really can't find any major criticisms in those two. I really can't, other than just small, insignificant things.
In my view, dear colleagues around this podcast, is that the best biographies of Lewis are yet to be written. But what we do have presently are a series of scholarly works that have great embedded biographies of Lewis. Where the biography is kind of accidental or incidental, but it comes within the framework of a kind of disinterested motivation, and therefore makes it unaffected, and it releases the writer, and it certainly releases the reader from having to take a definitive stand on this or that, but it's just flowing with the subject matter of the writer. So, for instance, I learned an awful lot about Lewis from Don King's expositions of his poetry. I've learned so much about Lewis's attitudes toward his students and his overall impact on Oxford and Cambridge from the work of Diana Glyer. You know, in addition to all the wonderful other things you learn from Diana's work, and then to me, the actually most tremendous part of Planet Narnia to me are Michael Ward's expositions of how Lewis thought about atmosphere and how he thought about the ways in which he wanted to convey story that really has as much to do with his Irish background and the ways in which he had relationships with his colleagues at Oxford, not only the Inklings, but his other colleagues. And I think is really an unmatched window into who Lewis was, why he might have made his colleagues jealous, but also admiring of his achievements. And I think those are those special moments. It's sort of like the offhand comments people make at birthdays and anniversaries, where they're not directly talking about the subject at hand, the birthday or the anniversary, but they're talking about the life they've lived with that loved one offhandedly. And I treasure those moments. And so I'm not so sure that I'm looking forward to another biography unless those qualities I've just described from Diana or Don or Michael are close at hand.
Absolutely. I think we see a lot of many shades in sort of peripheral references to Lewis. I love Diana's work. we see a lot of that in the, and frankly, I've been reading more Tolkien scholarship and sort of expanding at Diana's through her inspiration because of her book. And you see a lot of Lewis tucked away in there too. I mean, Lewis has been called the midwife for the Lord of the Rings, and how many people have been affected by Lord of the Rings? And you know, Lewis had a part in helping to bring that to fruition. So, yeah, I mean, you sort of see many pieces of him sort of scattered throughout things. And I agree, Ward does a great job. Don King does a fabulous, fabulous job. His prose reads like poetry, I think, at some points. It's just he's just a fantastic writer and a wonderful scholar. So yeah, absolutely, I agree with that.
Well, now, as a final way of wrapping up, let's have each of you comment regarding Lewis scholarship in general. There are obviously many books each year that come out about C.S. Lewis. Is this always a good thing? Can it be a bad thing? Can it be both good and bad in certain ways? Bruce, what are your thoughts?
I would say we're too easily pleased. The fact that a new book, a new article comes out, and I see people online at least, perhaps parading in front of other Lewis lovers and Lewis scholars, affect a kind of amazement. Oh, this is a tremendous insight, or this is a tremendous discovery, and some of them indeed are, and I think if we're educated enough into who Lewis was and his friendships and so forth, we can really discern whether something isn't truly a new or insightful thought about Lewis and his works. But too often, I think, we end up having this, I'll call it a completist attitude. That is, oh, that book has come out. I've got to get that book. And to me, even if I weren't, 4,000 miles away in Alaska, where, Amazon still takes a couple of extra days to get books to me, there's reluctance on my part without hearing from others and kind of looking carefully at the reviews, which is not the same thing as looking at the blurbs that are on the books. Because I suspect half of the blurbs written were written before there was a thorough examination of a book and its thesis and its in when it's coming down, and you might take some of the enthusiasm back, or you might take some of the unqualified praise back, and I think we don't want to prepare a future generation of Lewis readers with inflated sense of superiority to the scholarship written about him. I think we've been saying this in various ways, and I would just say that not everything that's published is worth publishing, and so we have to educate our presses and our editors. But not everything that's published is also worth reading, because it's like fast food or it's like junk food. There is such a thing that will make us eventually, I think, have some stomach problems with the writer we actually do love and who's meant so much to us, but we don't need him to be diminished by the poor scholarship of ambitious Me Too type scholars. And I think most of that is under control, but because word of mouth, I think, does a good job of telling you what's worth reading and what's not worth reading. But sometimes I have to admit it gets me down to think about the shelf space that's being taken by works that are not going to really enlighten or educate.
I think an advantage to the plethora of writing being done about C.S. Lewis, to the extensive number of books and articles and the like, is that it keeps his name out there. The cliche phrase is there's no such thing as bad press. And so if people keep seeing C.S. Lewis's name, they will hopefully keep going to Lewis's works. And as helpful as the criticism and the books about can be, the books by are the ones that we want to turn people to, that we want to get people to go and read. And so if there is a glut of writing about C.S. Lewis in the market, it nevertheless perhaps keeps his name alive and keeps people going to his works, going to the primary sources to read Lewis. And then I would also say this, I definitely see the danger that Bruce is raising for us about pop Lewis writing that becomes really bad scholarship. But then fortunately, we also have some pretty solid Lewis scholarly journals that continue to allow for the writing of deeper, more accurate, more scholarly texts about Lewis, and some publishers then too who are willing to continue to publish book-length scholarly material. So if there's a lot of fluff on the surface, beneath there's still some real substance that is being published on a regular basis. And so my overall view of the scene in regard to writing about Lewis is a positive view.
I think overall it's positive. I think my generation is kind of an enigma to a lot of church leaders and, been many articles written about the faith of millennials and sort of where their spiritual paths are guiding them. And, you know, I think Lewis resonates, and the reason we love him is because he continues to resonate into our culture and all aspects of humanity, especially spiritual folks. But I have to kind of mention what Charlie mentioned. There are a lot of people who use the name C.S. Lewis to get hits on their website or their article. And so they'll kind of make, I hate to sound like a prude here, but almost kind of bizarre correlations. You know, using C.S. Lewis or assuming that C.S. Lewis would take this or that side. And what really bothers me about that is that these people haven't read very much Lewis. Again, I'm not trying to sound like a what do you call them? A book nerd or
the Lewis police.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, I was looking for snob. I guess like book snob, a Lewis snob or whatever. But,
You do know enough, and you do know when somebody's – you don't just know enough. You know a lot, Crystal, and you do know when somebody is misusing mm-hmm. Lewis. You can tell because you are well-read in Lewis, and it's fair to mm-hmm. say that, and it's not mm-hmm. necessarily being boastful.
Yeah, I mean, I did a talk a couple years ago and somebody came up to me and said, I really enjoyed your talk, but I don't buy X, you know, point. And I said, well, there was an entire chapter written about that in, you know, this book. And the person said, well, I haven't read that book. And so I said, well, okay, go read it. You know, I mean, you can't, you know, and I was really taken aback because I thought you just came up here and said, you don't buy that point, you know, and then you admitted to me you hadn't read it. So, you know, but you mentioned it to me later. It was enough to, you know, to come up and mention it to me later. And it really scares me because how many people out there are just sort of taking what they see online and believing it. You know, without doing the research. It's something that I teach my students is about media literacy. And, you know, I love the great Ray Bradbury. He talks a lot. You guys know I teach creative writing. And Ray Bradbury talks in Fahrenheit 451 about the erosion of language, how we abbreviate and abbreviate and abbreviate till things are 140 characters or a blurb or a paragraph. That's kind of starting to happen in our culture. I'm not saying that he's prophetic. you know, people are just getting bits and pieces of information, and frighteningly, they're trusting them. And I think that's just not with Lewis, but across the board. So, you know, I think overall, and as you mentioned, there's some great journals out there that are, you know, that are peer reviewed, that are done, and who are producing amazing scholarship. But, you know, for the most part, I think it's just like anything, you have to be leery. You have to be, is that even a word? Yeah, you have to be, you know, critical of something you read, unless you know it for a fact. It's a cultural thing. I think that a lot of people struggle with that, you know, reading something on the internet and believing it. But you know, like we've mentioned, even some pretty admirable scholars have made mistakes in biographies. So, you know, they're, and of course, no one's, you know, flawless, but, you know, it's something to think about when you're continuing scholarship. Because as Bruce mentioned, the farther we get away from Lewis and people who knew him secondhand, sort of the more that we can see hyperbole and exaggeration sort of taking over, and even these sort of, I guess, misrepresented portrayals of Lewis. So that's just something that I'm concerned about.
Yeah, well, it sounds like we're trying to describe a middle ground where we want to encourage writers to express their appreciation for Lewis and or criticism of Lewis, as it may be, but not taking a laissez-faire attitude toward more serious treatments of, you know, for instance, I think Curtis's book on Lewis and women, I think will go a long way to those who can read it. And, you know, the journals, I think you're right, they're great, but how many people get to see those journals and or can afford those journals? I speak as a retiree. So there are, yeah, I think, you know, what William has been doing with the podcast, I think in retrospect, I think will be joyous over the, maybe not this broadcast, but others of his on special topics will be extremely valuable as a snapshot of what people were thinking about Lewis at a certain period of time. And I think, without being chronological snobs, I think I do tend to treasure and treat with greater respect things that were written earlier. And even though there's lots of things that we've learned and that are valuable, I think, you know, let's praise the new and the recent, but I think I've met too many people and I've read too many manuscripts for publishers as a reader of those manuscripts, and whether I recommend or not or call for revisions, that, you know, simply have never read or heard of Clyde Kilby. And you know, I think even a quick read of things that Kilby said in the late 50s and early 60s would clear up a lot of the mess that I see in manuscripts that you know, attempt to take a view of Lewis that's avant-garde or somehow, you know, something that I'll use a phrase, we evangelicals, you know, if we regard ourselves as evangelicals, or we Americans, or we men, or we women, you know, are attempting to disavow our point of view, like in Lewis's essay on Bulverism, where, you know, attributing to us a certain status is justifying a dismissal of what we have to say. And I think we don't want to go too far afield, but we do want some historical perspective. And I think if I could wish for anything among an upcoming generation of Lewis scholars, among whom are many formidable and very insightful writers, I would wish that they would at least try to maintain one foot in the past before completely dismissing the work that had been done, you know, for a couple of decades there at the end of Lewis's life. And I think that probably qualifies me as a curmudgeon, but I willingly accept that label if it means that people will take seriously their obligation to keep the past in view.
Well, I think that's what Lewis represented when he was alive. I mean, just the work that he and Tolkien did on the English curriculum at Oxford. And just, I mean, you know, he even mentioned, I think, in one of the interviews he did, that it's hard to steer with your back to the engine, sort of talking about himself sort of as a man who's, you know, as a dinosaur, as someone who's looking into the past. And I think you found great insight and nourishment from things of the past. And that's what makes them so classic. And I think a lot of there's been a push recently in education for a great books curriculum. And I couldn't be more of a fan because, you know, these are things that have taught generations of scholars, including Lewis himself. So absolutely, I think it's important to sort of see the contemporary, but also understand the historical aspects and how valuable they are.
Well, as much as I hate to wrap us up here, I am going to need to do that. Let me just add just a brief comment in regards to like some comments related to, you know, any book about Lewis's life or his writings, and then people kind of give it too quick of a praise. There was recently on Facebook at the time of this recording where there was a contrast of a dog's diary versus a cat's diary. And this is not meant to say that cats are better than dogs, although, of course, that's my personal preference. But anyway, the dog's diary led with real short descriptions of something the dog just did. And then each time it was my favorite thing. Then in contrast, the cat's diary is like five paragraphs, and it's a lot more cynical. And so I think one of the things that all of us are advocating when considering any book, either about the life of Lewis or Lewis's writings, is that we need to not have either extreme to where it's your absolute favorite, whatever you happen to be reading at the moment, and not giving it really closer consideration versus the cat's diary starts out with, my captors continue to taunt me with bizarre little lean objects, and then it real cynical like a diary entry. And so we should read Lewis, of course, we are advocating, and then hopefully books about the life of Lewis or about Lewis's writings will help us to go back into what Lewis has said himself. With that, let me give thanks to Bruce Edwards for being with us. Thanks, Bruce.
I always enjoy these conversations.
Dr. Charlie Starr, thank you for being a part of this trio.
I'm happy to be a part of the work you're doing, William, and I really thank you for doing it.
And finally, Crystal Hurd, I guess if I include myself, we would be the Four Musketeers. But either way, Crystal, it's good to have you.
It's always a pleasure, William.
Let me also thank you as the listener for joining me and my guest today. As noted at the start, if you haven't heard the first part that focused on just the three biographies, then be sure to check the show notes for a direct link. Accomplish that by stopping by EssentialCSLewis.com or allaboutjack.podbean.com, which is also where you can find the show notes containing the links to where the Buy the Books discussed and hear interviews I actually did with McGrath, Duryea, and Brown back in 2013. I also have links to other programs where my guests today have appeared, as well as each of their own websites. Again, that's EssentialCSLewis.com, or where the audio files are hosted directly at allaboutjack.podbean.com. Podbean is spelled P-O-D-B-E-A-N. If you enjoy this podcast, please consider sharing it with others. Also, feel free to leave comments about the programs online at EssentialCSLewis.com or at allaboutjack.podbean.com. There you can also find previous shows where I typically do author interviews. I recently reposted an interview I did with Dr. Don King about a book collecting the letters of Joy David Mint, Lewis's wife. The title of that book is Out of My Bone. My last new interview was with Dr. Jerry Root about a book due out later in 2015 called The Surprising Imagination of C.S. Lewis that he co-wrote. And then back in early March of 2015, I released an interview where I spoke with a guest from Christian History Magazine about a special issue they did on seven literary sages, that includes C.S. Lewis, of course. You can hear those and others by either going to EssentialCSLewis.com or allaboutjack.podbean.com. If you have questions or comments, email them to info@EssentialCSLewis.com. Again, that's info@EssentialCSLewis.com.